You're listening to Source Daily. Join us Monday through Friday to stay up to date on what's happening in North Central Ohio. We'll be sharing a closer look at one of our top stories, along with other news, local history, memorials, answers to your questions, and more. To celebrate our 10-year anniversary, we're taking a look back at some of the biggest stories and our favorite memories. Today, we're going back in time to 2018. Before we continue, the Eshland Balloon Fest is back with another fabulous weekend, June 22nd through June 24th, 2023. Join for hot air balloons, food vendors, live entertainment, activities for kids, spectacular balloon glows, and much more. To get tickets, visit them at ashlandohioballoonfest.com. Now our feature story. Richland Source is grateful to be celebrating 10 years of local reporting across North Central Ohio. While other newspapers in Ohio and across the nation have closed their doors during this time, we've embraced the digital era without compromising on quality journalism. If having a trusted, independent news source in your community is important to you, please visit richlandsource.com/members to become a member and support our work. Now let's head back to our sixth year, 2018.
My name's Grant Pepper. I'm a reporter with Knox Pages, part of the Richland Source Media Network, and I'm here with...
Maggie Allred. I'm a digital marketing and content specialist with Source Brand Solutions.
And we are here today to talk about the year 2018, both in Richland Source and Source Media Properties history and in the world, the broader picture. We'll start with a little bit about each of us, what we were doing at that time. So, Maggie, who were you and what were you doing in 2018?
I was in high school. I was either a sophomore or junior, methinks. I was actually an intern here. I was leaving, though, I think. So I was just a baby. I think I was coming here after school for a few hours. I was a marketing intern, kind of in the background, soaking up what was happening.
And you were, what year high school was this?
Sophomore, junior year.
Okay, so a long time ago. And obviously, we're thrilled to have you, you know, back with us now. I was in a transitional period of my life in 2018 in terms of I was graduating from Ohio Northern University and I was coming here. So I got here in June, I think it was May 29th technically, and Source Media Properties, Richland Source, had acquired KnoxPages.com, the website down in Knox County, a few months prior, late 2017. So I was lucky enough to be hired to be the first full-time reporter that the company has had in Knox County. So I came on in June, and I've been here ever since. So we'll get into a little bit of what was going on in our neck of the woods in North Central Ohio and in our newsroom during that year. So we'll start with really early on. Maggie, walk us through a couple early big stories in Richland and Ashland County here.
On January 18th, we're going to start with a silly one. So there was a photo shoot that went viral. A family got their... They got their faces just horribly photoshopped. It's horrendous, but it's really funny. A quote from the Facebook post, they said, "We paid a photographer who claimed to be a professional $250 for a family photo shoot," and they're terrifying. It's kind of out of a horror film.
Yeah, I mean, their faces look like cement.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Local family famous for all the wrong reasons. That's actually a really funny story. Zach wrote that. Zach Kaiser.
Oh, yeah. If I were them, I think I would hang these up, honestly. Like, I think it's better than normal ones. And they went viral for it, so good for them.
Right.
I hope they're doing well. What else happened? Matt Miller was sworn in as mayor in Ashland.
And he's had quite the run there since then, so that was the beginning of that era. Down in Knox County, it was a up and down year. Before I got here, Probably the biggest business story in probably of the decade happened, which was Siemens, the manufacturing company, right in the heart of Mount Vernon, left. They announced they're going to be phasing out their Mount Vernon plant. And I remember, so I was interviewing here in February of 2018 when this was all happening, and I remember seeing the website and seeing a few stories about this. Interesting to note that property. So that was a big deal. Bunch of workers had to leave, either go with Siemens as they transitioned out of Mount Vernon or find new jobs. And so that was a big blow to the community. And it's something people were talking about when I got here. What's interesting is that in the years since then, that property down there where Siemens is a massive, massive plant down the west end of Mount Vernon, and the land bank has since acquired that property from the company, and is now really ever since 2020 has begun to market it as Heartland Commerce Park. And there are a couple businesses that are already in there, but basically it's now turned into a locally owned business hub, and they're looking to kind of people, the local leaders down there are kind of looking to bring a bunch of different kinds of businesses into that space. And so this is one of those situations where sometimes you get big companies that close down and they sit there for a long time and they kind of go into decay. And so for Knox County, that actually didn't happen. There are some people down there who made sure that didn't happen, but that was a big story. And then also, really after you look past Siemens announcing it's going to leave, like, there are actually a lot of very positive things that happened in that community. And it was my first year there. And so some of these Knox headlines resonate a little more with me because my life was Knox County, covering Knox County every single day. But, several things happened. Knox Community Hospital broke ground on its family care center. That's obviously now completed. And that's a $45 million facility. Major addition to their main campus on Mount Vernon's East End. I remember covering that one of my first weeks here when they broke ground on that.
I think that was one of the headlines that Jay mentioned. That was one of the first signals that Mount Vernon, like, this was all starting to come together, is what he said.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mount Vernon has gone through quite a renaissance over really the last decade, but Ohio and hate the term Rust Belt, but our part of the country, the part of the country that has relied a lot on manufacturing, obviously, as we all know, has seen its challenges since the recession, and Mount Vernon has the downtown part. And then also, you've got a bunch of business expansion that's happened there over the last 10, 15 years. But Mount Vernon's been lucky enough to have a lot of people down there who are really intentional about where they're investing their money, and they're really driven to see the community rebound and move forward. And so, we've been able to cover, I wouldn't say latter years because it's still happening, but kind of some of the fruits of that investment. And one of those was KCH expanding and still expanding again this past year in Centerburg, and all kinds of projects that just kind of started popping up because investment builds on itself. And so, KCH was definitely, their family care center was definitely a big deal. And it was one of several pretty big things that happened in Mount Vernon and Knox County that year that kind of symbolized the fruits of that investment to kind of bring it back. And then there's a lot of news in Richland County. Actually, if you look ahead of the fall of 2018, so zoom ahead a little bit, September was a big month. One day in particular, the 21st, was a big day. It was a Friday. Maggie, let's start with the headlines, and then we'll talk about them a little bit.
Yeah. So September 21st was a big day. We were having After Hours, which is our concert series, but also Sean Christie was getting captured after a 6-day manhunt. So that was interesting. A press conference had been called. So this is a quote from the story. Authorities believe Christie stole a pickup truck in the early morning hours of September 16th. and he was gone for 6 days, but they finally got him. And I think to this day, this is one of our biggest stories, if not the biggest.
Yeah, this was, yeah, so again, like most of my time and focus was spent in Knox County, but this was big enough that, like, I remember following this pretty closely, and we had this is a federal fugitive case, and the majority of, if not all of this chasing happened in Richland County. So mm-hmm. I remember there being regional concern about this event, and gosh, yeah, from what I recall, this started pretty late on a Sunday night. We had a reporter, I think it was Tracy Geibel, now Tracy Liturgy. I think she was the one who went out there, and one of us was out there really late on a Sunday night after the crash happened. And then again, for the whole work week, it was updates on this fugitive chase. And I remember the day they caught him, and on that day, like you said, Maggie, we had after hours that night. There's also, it was in the fall, so it was a Friday night, so we also had like five high school football games to cover. And at the same time that Sean Christie was being captured, Madison Local Schools here in Richland County, some big news from them. Their board voted to relieve their superintendent of their duties, and so that was, and it was they called a meeting, an emergency session to do this on Friday afternoon. So Brittany Schock was out there covering that. So I mean, we were all over the place because that, I believe the superintendent vote happened around 2 or 3. Christie was captured. I remember exactly. I was driving to Ashland to cover Mount Vernon at Ashland football game, and I remember getting an alert, a breaking news alert from the source on my phone, saying that the federal law enforcement people had caught him. Just a crazy, crazy, crazy week. I mean, like you said, we go back and look like sometimes at our web traffic numbers over the years. Like, I think last year we did that all the way back to 2013, and this was like one of the biggest days, if not the biggest day Richland Sources ever had, and it was all those things happening at once. It was just insanity.
I'm looking back, there's 11 stories linked in this one story. That's how much was happening. And I forgot Dog the Bounty Hunter was involved.
Oh, yes.
As well.
This is like a national thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was huge. I completely forgot he was involved in this.
Yeah, which is really too bad, because that was the best part. Yeah, that was just nuts. And it was one of those things where, like, it came and it went. Like, mm-hmm. once they got him, you know, obviously the public concern dies down a little bit, and then next day it's just back to normal. But it, for like 5 days, it was definitely a loud and noisy 5 days in our part of Ohio.
It's all you saw on social media.
Yeah, yeah. And there's rumors. I remember there being rumors. Oh, I heard they're looking for him over here, and I heard this and this, and so it was a lot of I'm sure Larry or Ed, or I'm sure he didn't really sleep well that week, because he was just dealing with a lot of potential stories and a lot of rumors going around. Yeah.
But on a more positive note, in November, TEDx came to Mansfield, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. I remember going to this event. The difference between TED Talks and TEDx is just generally aimed at a smaller and local audience. So we had different themes for the speeches. There were experts in filmmaking, urban farming, mathematics, education, psychology, meditation, community development. So there's a wide range of education being delivered. And this was a really cool and innovative event for Mansfield. I remember being there and just very entranced by what I was learning. So that was really important for the city and our growth, I think. We still have the sign here in the office. And then after, November was a pretty big month, too. Yeah, a murder in Mansfield also came to the Renaissance. Collier Landry's documentary.
That was in, so play at the Ren in the summer, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah, this
and
was
then, yeah. This is when he got on Dr. Phil.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that was so. Just to backtrack a couple months, because I do remember that now. So that summer, I'm thinking July, maybe June, A Murder in Mansfield had I forget how many shows they did at the Wren, but it was, I mean, really well attended. It was one of the first things I remember coming to hear that, like, one of our events, one of our community engagement events. And I was just floored by the interest in this. Obviously, it was a massive deal in Mansfield at the time, but just the captivation, the whole situation still had over the community, and the amount of interest there was in it locally, and just the turnout for those shows is just incredible. And to have the panel they had at those, we're talking about really key players in that case, and the multimedia they had, I mean, just the visuals from it. And so yeah, this would have been like the follow up later that year on that. Mm-hmm. So maybe Dr. Ville saw something about what happened to Mansfield and decided to get him on. That was a big deal, though.
Because that's when he talked to his dad in jail. Oh gosh.
Right. Yeah. That was. That whole, I was just stunned by that whole presentation, and like how many people came out to see that and to see him. And obviously that's still a very well remembered and high interest story.
And the actual humans involved too. There were so many people involved in the case that showed up and were active in sharing the story.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember Brittany playing a big part in, obviously the whole team was involved with this, but just the it was really a big deal for us to be involved in telling that story again. Mm-hmm. I believe Larry, our editor, Larry Phillips, was on that panel. At least he was involved in the event in some way, and just, you know, being able to not necessarily rehash that and reopen wounds, but I think that there's an element of closure that event provided, and to the community, and a really productive and good place, a good way to talk about it. And I remember it being a really big deal that we were able to be involved with that. There were a few things in December that happened in Mount Vernon that were actually a fairly big deal. We ended the year, that community ended the year with kind of a bang. That month alone, we had three pretty big stories. So I talked about kind of the momentum that had begun to build in the mid-2010s in Knox County and in Mount Vernon, and particularly kind of the downtown corridor. I mean, there's just a lot of investment, a lot of people who were in the community at the time, many of them still are, who were really focused on investing to lift Mount Vernon to new heights. And one of those projects that stood out and still stands out is the renovated apartments downtown. That it was a partnership between Knox Community Hospital, Kenyon College, and Mount Vernon Nazarene University. So this is a big deal, because essentially what they did was these three institutions came together and they pulled their resources together under a common cause, which was that all three of them knew that they needed kind of transitional housing for some of their employees. So for Kenyon College and the NAS, maybe it's faculty who are working to get a full-time residence in Mount Vernon or in Knox County, but they're, you know, they need somewhere nice and attractive to stay in the meantime. For the hospital, you know, that's the same deal, but with physicians, doctors, things like that. So they wanted options for this kind of housing for those kind of employees, and they wanted to do it in a way that also helped lift up downtown Mount Vernon. Like I said, there's just a whole lot of energy put towards that at the time, and there really still is. So what they did was they pulled their resources together and they renovated 16 living spaces, pretty upscale apartments. And it was on the corner, let me make sure I get the street names right, it was on the corner of Main and Gambier. Yeah, so it was right near the old bank down there. And I remember that project, those spaces were largely vacant, and I remember being in there at various points during the construction process, and just how big of a deal it was that people were investing in living in upper level living in downtown Mount Vernon. That was something that hadn't been done in a while, at least like this. And so, and for it to be a process that involved you know, multiple agencies. The Ariel Foundation, if I remember correctly, had a significant role in this. And so just the whole collaboration aspect of it, that was a really big deal. And that turned out, I mean, those apartments were completed in 2020. And I believe people moved in 21, if memory serves. And I mean, yeah, they're beautiful. Like, you know, you go down there now and they're right across from what was being worked on at the same time, which is the dog found right across the street, which if, you know, you've been to Mount Vernon in the last 2 years, you know where that is, because it is, it's on and it's like, it's a thing to see in Mount Vernon. And so that whole corner, that whole part, that whole intersection really, really got a nice reinvigoration to it. Beginning of that year. That was exciting. And then a couple other things that happened. So 2018 was really, if memory serves, and I'm going to go back and read a little bit of the story. Essentially, the Knox County Land Bank had been building towards this, but this was really, you know, we have a headline. Our Cheryl Splain wrote a story in December of 2018 about how, you know, the land bank was starting to acquire funds, and it was getting to the point where, you know, they're now going to be able to start doing things like buying vacant properties and you know, eventually like doing things like we talked about with the old Siemens property, where they can have some reserves to really start making a, you know, quick and big impact in the community. So we've written since about the Knox County Land Bank and what it's been able to accomplish. But this was really kind of the beginning of seeing that realization, or seeing that process come to fruition. Another big headline, again from December 2018, in a whole different way, but in a similar sense, is when the Woodward Opera House announced that it was going to be reopening. And if you've never been there, it's a beautiful place. It's right as they get in downtown Mount Vernon again. So, you know, talking again about reinvestment down there. The Woodward is known to this day as America's oldest authentic 19th century theater still standing. So that's a lot of words, but basically it's a piece of history, and it's, gosh, I mean, it was, I'll have to go back through the history here, but you know, this theater had been having showings of all kinds since the 1800s, 1850s. And so it got to a point, you know, in the 1920s where it was not being used anymore, and it had run its course. And so this opera house, it closed in 1921. It sat there vacant until Pat Crow, investor in the community in a lot of ways, decided to take it on. And so in 1998, he took on this project. He and a team of people took on this project and said, "We are going to bring this back. We're going to make this. We're going to bring the Woodward back to a, you know, in a bigger and better way. It's not just going to be a theater anymore. We're also going to have other parts of the facility, meeting rooms, smaller theater spaces. The whole vision was centered around making the Woodward an asset to the community, something that brought people into Mount Vernon, brought talent into Mount Vernon, and served as a centerpiece for art in Mount Vernon and artistic mm-hmm. expression in Mount Vernon and Central Ohio. And so over the next 25 years, that's what they worked on. And it took a lot of renovation and a lot of fundraising work. And this was, you know, by late 2018, they were ready to say we're good enough to open in the next coming months. So if I remember correctly, February 2019 was like the soft launch of the Woodward round two, V2. And just being there for that, I covered the first few shows back in early 2019. And it was just amazing to hear the stories of the people who were in the audience, because that's mostly who I wanted to talk to. And just hearing their memories of, when I was a kid, I would sneak into this place and there were birds flying around, and you know, there's nothing in here. And just to see the
oh wow,
yeah, I mean, there are people who had serious core memories of this facility, but in a way different way. It was vacant. It was a relic of the past. And seeing the looks on their faces when they walked in there and saw it for the first time as it maybe, because the whole a part of the vision was bringing back kind of what it looked like in the 1800s. I mean, they tried to restore a lot of the architectural aspects of it just in a newer way. And so to see their faces when they walked in and it was bright and shiny and brand new, and they were going to go in there and watch, you know, a musician play for 2 hours, and just to hear the musicians talk about the level of the nicety of the acoustics in there, mm-hmm. it's just a very unique space. And the fact that the theater itself, if you've ever been to Mount Vernon, the first floor is retail, and the second floor is largely office space. If I'm correct, I might be mixing this up a little bit, but it's an upper floor theater. So the windows look out over, you know, the square essentially and downtown. So it's just that whole experience of late 2018, like we're talking about when they announced it, that was a huge deal, that was a big story. And then, you know, getting into early 2019 and the community actually being welcomed back into the theater and that becoming again a part of the art scene in Mount Vernon, that was just a really big deal. It was around the same time that people in that space, in the arts and culture space in Mount Vernon, were beginning to consider what is now the Mount Vernon Arts Consortium, which is, you know, the Woodward's is still its own thing, but there's essentially an effort to unify and kind of promote art in Mount Vernon through the different venues that we have down there. So that's a lot of rambling, but basically this is a big deal. This
like
is a
rebirth.
It was a rebirth. Yeah. I mean, it was, you gotta understand, like, this was vacant for 100 years, and so for it to be, and where the Woodward's located, I mean, we're one block off the square, like I said, big building. And it was something that meant so much to so many people when it was up, and people waited for 20 years for this thing to get done because it was a big project. I mean, big projects take a long time and a lot of money. And when we were able to say, like, it's back and here's the first, you know, few concerts, and they were able to start selling tickets. And I wrote a story the first night that they reopened. And the headline was like "A Night at the Woodward: something." And I remember, like, it was this feature, and I stayed up till like 6 a.m. writing it because I was so excited for people to read this story, just because there's so much energy around the whole thing. It was very cool. Yeah. And it was something like, you know, I'm sure that when the Wren opened up here, and when there's certain projects that, you know, yes, like, It's not to say certain projects mean more than others, but when you've got something that's so central to the identity of a town, like the Woodward is to Mount Vernon, people were really proud to have that reopen. And it's now, you know, if you look at Mount Vernon now, it's now something that does bring people to Mount Vernon. I mean, it is a draw.
Yeah.
I've
written about the Renaissance, and everybody I've talked to and interviewed, just so much passion comes out of talking about it. Just the place itself, not even the activities or the performance, it's just talking about it as a place and just being in Mansfield. It's a staple, and it brings people so much joy and passion. The arts are such a huge thing, and especially when you can bring back something nostalgic too, that's such an important aspect to a community, I think.
Yeah. Like, I remember especially the first couple years when I would drive down and it'd be a Friday night and I would see people walking to the theater. Just how cool that, like, I get chills thinking about how cool that was to see that happening in Mount Vernon, because it had been a while. And, you know, it's the same feeling you get when we have a great facility up the street from that, the Knox Memorial, and we have, you know, there's events there all the time, and you know, shows and concerts, things like that. And just, you know, just like seeing people walking towards something to be together, to experience something together, regardless of if they're from here or not. And all, I know those events bring people in from Columbus and other parts of our region. It's just very special. And so that was what was cool about that 2018 in Knox County for me, was that, you know, like I said, I got to see some of that Renaissance happening with the investment in downtown, especially in Mount Vernon. But it wasn't just in one area. It wasn't just in housing. It wasn't just in business. It wasn't just in arts. It was all of it. And it was a really cool way to start my time here, because we had big stories and they touched a lot of different parts of our community.
Right. So we had a lot of stuff happening in 2018 as a business. In September, the team went to Austin, Texas, to kick off the Facebook Journalism Project. Facebook invited us and 16 other news organizations in the world to participate in a local news membership accelerator. And then they came to us as well. We also launched Open Source, which is what we use now, so users can submit questions and our journalists will answer them. So if you have a question, go check it out. Mansfield Rising was also beginning. A team went to South by Southwest and began to reimagine Mansfield from the inside out. So a group embarks on a year-long project to develop city's central business district. We had a couple solutions journalism projects that were pretty big. Gray Matters and Rising from Rust.
Yeah, and Gray Matters, so if I remember correctly, Gray Matters and Rising Rust, in 2018, by the time we're talking here, 2018 was kind of the year we wrapped those projects. They were big solutions journalism projects for us. Gray Matters itself was a series. Our whole team worked on both these series. This series, again, a SOJO solutions journalism project focusing on the aging population and their caregivers in our region in North Central Ohio. This was a project. It was a lot of boots on the ground reporting for this, and that went a long way in establishing Richland Source as a leader in solutions journalism, not only locally but nationally. As did Rising from Rust. Rising from Rust was, we were doing these at the same time, but Rising from Rust was more focused on the future of Mansfield and North Central Ohio in relation to the stigma that comes with being a quote unquote Rust Belt area. So it was a series that looked at the potential for our region post some of the industrial aspects of it that left, after the recession. The official description here of the series is how Richland County fights its way out of the Rust Belt. So again, basically looking ahead and using solutions journalism to allow the community to dream about what its future might look like with somewhat of a new identity in some ways. So those projects were big, and we were able to raise $70,000 just for solutions journalism that year. And a lot of it, from what I recall, was due to those projects being, again, really the coming out party for, or one of the ways that Richland Source really started to signal to the world that we were serious about solutions journalism. Despite being a small staff, we were committed to it, and we were good at it. That was a big year for us in that respect.
So we got our first full-time reporter in Knox, which was you.
Yes.
And Ashland Source celebrated the first full year with Courtney McNall.
And she was me in Ashland County. She was Ashland's first full-timer with us. Yeah. And so that was a big deal. Like, Courtney, to me, was a little bit of a role model in how to handle this kind of a role. Courtney,
it's a big thing to do on your own.
Yeah. And Courtney was with it. I believe she was with the team prior to this, and then she moved into that role. But yeah, she's still with the Ashland community, with their foundation, but it was a big deal for her to step into that role and kind of lead Ashland Source to what it is now. From a national and a state perspective, we tried to find positive news, and it was really hard. The year of 2018, it was mired in a lot of politics, which I'm sure is very hard to imagine. Given kind of how our news looks these days, so there was a lot of domestic and foreign conflict in the news. This was also kind of in the middle stages of the Me Too movement. We saw some interesting pop cultural things happening, like Meghan Markle joins the British royal family. We had some horrendously sad things happen. I mean, there were several mass school shootings that year. There was a lot of things in the news that just made us not feel great. There were also several major hurricanes that year. We tried. It was hard. We tried to find cool things that happened.
The yodeling kid existed apparently that year.
Was that that year?
Yeah.
The Walmart yodeling kid?
Yeah. So we have that.
Hopefully one person listening to this understands what we're talking about. We were united by, I'm pretty sure he went on to have a little bit of a career, I hope.
Yeah. Apparently a raccoon scaled a skyscraper.
Big year for him. Yeah, I mean, so it wasn't all bad. Most of the serious things were not great. But yeah, I mean, you know, the raccoon scale and skyscraper. From a state perspective, had some dark stuff happen here as well. This was February. It might have been January, and I apologize if I'm getting the dates wrong here. This was the year that I believe it was 3 Westerville police officers were killed on the line of duty. This happened again in the winter of 2018. It was really sad. This turned into a national story. So that was a I have vivid memories of where I was when that happened. On a different note, that summer, if you are a sports fan or sports adjacent, Urban Meyer got into some hot water that summer. He had I believe an assistant coach that was facing some domestic violence allegations, if I remember correctly. I mean, it was something that was also a national story. That happened. And then also that year, the Attorney General of Ohio, Mike DeWine, he sued agricultural giant Monsanto, alleging the company concealed dangers posed by a toxic chemical compound that it manufactured for nearly half a century. So I remember vaguely that as well. But yeah, some kind of interesting headlines at the state perspective around that time as well.
As we're wrapping, what do you think your favorite memory here has been?
From the last... So I've been here 5 years. So 2018, 20... So 5 years. Well, we have a lot of fun here. Mm-hmm. So this is a company that is serious about its work, but also has always been serious about enjoying time together as people and getting to know people as people first. We're in the people business, and we've had some fun after hours that I've been able to go to. Mm-hmm. Like those have been, because it's us, technically doing community engagement, doing a little bit of journalism, but it's also like an opportunity for us just to kick back and like have a drink and meet new people. So there have been a couple of those that have been really fun. Some of the job experiences that I had during those 5 years, like there's so many to think about. But one time, this was in 2021, we were doing a membership drive, and we're thinking of ways to meet our goal for individual members that year. And I had an idea that I was going to, because at that point I was, we were fairly well known in Knox County, and that I was going to announce that if we reach a certain number of members with a discount code like Knox or Grant or whatever it was, then I would eat raccoon on camera at the Danville Raccoon Dinner, which if you've never been at the Danville Raccoon Dinner, what have you done with your life? And it's the first Monday in February in Danville. You'll know where it is when you see it. Everyone's there. But that worked. And so Knox had the most members and of our 3-county territory that membership drive. And so like a month later, there I was eating raccoon on camera, which was interesting. And it's not as bad as you think it is. That was a fun memory. So stuff like that. It's rarely like... Yeah, what?
Pretty iconic.
Yeah, I mean, people always would talk. It's like the one thing people would, like, I would go somewhere, they'd be like, during the whole contest, it'd be like, how close are you to winning? Mm-hmm. You know, because, like, it was just a funny thing. So it's the fun stuff. I mean, I love the work here has been awesome, but also it's like, it's the stuff that is just fun stuff. It lets people know you're human, and it's like a great way to interact with the community. Our company's always been good at doing things that are outside of journalism that help us to become better community members at mm-hmm. the same time. So that stuff stands out to me. What about you?
First off, you're forever going to be associated with raccoons.
I'm fine with that. And it makes sense. It's a good metaphor, because when you go to the raccoon dinner, and you will, the big thing to remember is that, or the big thing to think about is, whatever you wear to it, that smell will carry with you until you wash it out intentionally. So, like, if you go there wearing a jacket, you need to be able to wash that jacket as soon as you get home.
Oh my God.
Because it will the smell will carry, and it will stay with that jacket if you don't throw it in the wash. So don't wear some wool jacket or whatever you can't wash.
God.
And the same kind of goes for your car. So, you know, like, normally what I would do is I would ride home with the windows down. It's in February, but it's necessary because the smell is strong. And it's not really a bad smell, in my opinion, but it's just strong. And so, much like the smell of boiled raccoon endures, hopefully my legacy with the raccoons will also endure. So that's a good metaphor.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
So I can think of a lot, but I mean, just memories with people here in general, and just being here is always good, especially ops team and stuff. But in 2018, actually, when I was an intern, it was the summer, so I was working more hours. And I was here on a morning, actually, which I usually wasn't. Third Cup Tea, it used to be the field market, and a deer ran through the window and shattered the glass, and it was a thing. And everyone was like, oh my God, this thing just happened. And it was just, that was kind of the first, like, it wasn't like breaking news kind of thing, but it was the first time I was in a newsroom when, like, something happened, and I just was like, what is going on? Everyone is, like, thing, it's like active. I don't know. It was really interesting. Yeah, that's kind of the distinct thing I can think of that was really special.
There are so many, because that was my first half year here, and so there's just so many visceral memories of what it felt like to be brand new to a community. Mm-hmm. So for me, I had Larry, our editor, Larry Phillips, he took me to Mount Vernon once during the interview process. So I had seen it from a car, but I'd never actually been to Mount Vernon until I moved here and started working. And so it was really, like, it really felt, we had a good foundation built down there, but the process of getting to know people really quickly and, like, working really hard to not screw things up every single day, because I was just so young. Like, I'm still fairly young, but, like, being 22 years old and being new and having to be an adult and having to, like, that was a very formative experience for me. And I leaned a lot on Cheryl Splain, and still do. She's a longtime reporter in Knox County, and we've been so lucky to have her on our team for so long. And I leaned a lot on Larry and all of our folks with Source Media. But, like, that was a huge learning curve that year for me. So I guess I do want to say thank you, because the people who helped me through that year, I know you know who you are, and I know who you are, and I that was a big deal to me that people would welcome me in that way, because I was scared, you know. It was a completely new thing. So
yeah, and that's kind of where I've been, and it's really fun at the same time. You know, I covered incarceration and was like, had kind of no idea what I was doing, but it was really fun and ended up really well. I think that was another favorite. So it's been a great time.
Yeah. And you know, this sounds corny, but to wrap things here, I mean, these stories we've talked about and our experiences here at the Source have been possible because of the broader community. I mean, we are here, we started and we have endured because of the broader family that is our community in North Central Ohio. And so we'd like to thank, you know, you, our readers and neighbors, for allowing this to happen. 10 years is no small thing. And every day of years like this, like we've talked about 2018, our focus has always been to serve. And it's been a two-way relationship. It's been a two-way street. And you have brought us to this point. And so when we think about these memories, we think about you. We think about community members. So
for sure.
we really appreciate you guiding us here.
Make sure to tune in tomorrow as we continue to hear from the team on some of the biggest moments throughout our 10 years. Next, an event coming up that you should know about. Tonight at 6 p.m., head over to the Marvin Memorial Library in Shelby for movie night. Bring the whole family and enjoy a screening of the modern 2016 favorite, Sing, starring Matthew McConaughey, Reese Witherspoon, Seth MacFarlane, and more. Snacks and refreshments will be provided. PJs are optional. Have fun. Finally, we'd like to take a moment to remember the life of Eileen White. Eileen was born in North Braddock, Pennsylvania in 1950. Eileen cherished spending time with her brothers and greatly adored her grandchildren and visits with them. She especially loved her time with her daughter, Ivy. Eileen had a close relationship with her neighbors and enjoyed playing bingo and working on puzzles. The family would like to thank her sister-in-law, Janice, for all her support and kindness. She is survived by her daughter, grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, her brothers, her sister-in-law, and numerous nieces and nephews. In addition to her parents, she was preceded in death by her husband, Ralph. Thank you for taking a moment to celebrate and remember Eileen's life. You can submit an obituary for free on Richland Source. To learn more, click the link in our show notes or visit richlandsource.com/obituaries/submit. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow. Also, make sure to head over to richlandsource.com and click the Be a Member button to help support independent local journalism that informs and inspires. Every contribution goes to helping us make Richland County a better place and to help keep our journalism free. Also, if you like this podcast and want to hear more, make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.